a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant. That's a G. No, and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at La Berge Casino Resort in Lake Charles. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Try to score, and Jose's in there.
Caught him sleeping.
Bryce Harper taking his time on that close play at first, and Altuve noticed and took off for the plate and scored the first run.
Gallant George here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Sportsbook at La Berge in Lake Charles. Thanks again to Matt Holland for joining us here today. We'll be joined as well throughout the show by a couple other people today and tomorrow to promote what's going on here. Still some time to do some fantasy football stuff. That we'll be talking about, and some golf excursions you can do, talking about the pool, which I think we're going to be hitting after the show, as long as it doesn't rain too much.
Yeah.
I think we're okay.
So, knock on wood, but yes, so far so good.
So Altuve steals home, gets the offense finally moving in like a somewhat positive direction. Fun play. That's like Harper 101, is still learning to play first base, I would assume.
He's an outfielder playing first base.
Yeah, he looks so uncomfortable chasing down those foul balls. Like, all series long, and I didn't see the one yesterday, but there was one yesterday as well where I heard them talking about it on the radio where, you know, he's running after it, and he has space to get it, but he just kind of pulls up lame, like, right before he gets there.
Yeah,
seems not comfortable at first yet, but you gotta do what you gotta do.
I think he had one on Wednesday, Tuesday's game, too, where it was another foul pop-up that landed, like, on the grass that he didn't get to, and you would think as an outfielder, that'd be the thing that translates the best to being a first baseman. They're talking about it on the FS1 broadcast. I know about how he feels more comfortable, like stretching out and doing, like trying to scoop at first. So yeah, that's a lot of stuff that I understand might be harder for someone picking up a new position. I will say being caught napping like that, like he was yesterday on the Altuve steal of home, that feels a little bit more of just a mental lapse, and it's a day game, it's one of 162, and he's a little bit slow, you know, to get the ball back to the pitcher. And like, that to me is more of a mental mistake that even if he's comfortable playing first, he might still just made that mental mistake.
Yeah, and this is and the Altuve, the play itself, like, this is where it's the good with the bad with the aggressiveness. Like, there are times where obviously with Altuve, like, it kind of blows up in his face a little bit, and it's a disastrous play. But this is where I get the approach that he takes, that, like, trying to be more aggressive and go for it. Like there is a reason why it's working. He's got his first 2020 season, you know, since 2017, 20 home runs and 20 stolen bases. So I like the aggressiveness in which he plays with. There are times where it's frustrating. I also think that sometimes, like, people confuse the aggressive plays with just, like, there are just bonehead plays from Altuve.
Yeah, it's
like, I don't feel like he's overly aggressive, and that's what you're critical about. Sometimes I think he just makes bad base running blunders.
Yeah, he's not like, you know, Josh Allen of baseball, where it's like, hey, you live with the aggression, because he makes sure he's going to throw some picks doing that, but he makes so many more explosive plays by doing that. Yeah, the mistakes that he does make, a lot of times you're just like, what are you looking at there? Like, what is happening? What was going on in your head? It wasn't just he's always trying to stretch out a single into a double or score from second to home where he might not actually have. There's a lot more stuff where you're just like, why is he not, like, tagging up there? Or why did he tag up there? There's a lot more of those than just he runs himself into trouble.
Yeah, like a play like yesterday, like, I'm going to trust him instinctually over most players in baseball, even if he's going to get it wrong sometimes. If he thinks he's got space to go, like,
do it.
You got to do it. Like, if you're seeing trends, he's going to know better than most. Like, then just be aggressive and go after it. I don't want to see, you know, I mean, it's in AAA now, but I don't want to see Chaz making that play. But, like, if it's Altuve, go for it.
Yeah, I think it's even less about the speed thing, because it's more of a mental, like, what you trust these guys knowing the game and knowing what they can and can't do. And that might be something where, as Altuve gets older, and he probably will, lose a couple steps on the base paths, maybe the aggression, he'll either run himself into more outs, or maybe he dials it back a little bit in, you know, 2-3 years from now.
All right, what's the most exciting play in baseball? Where's Steely Home rank? Eric the Driver, you can text in 713-780-3776. What is the most exciting play in baseball? I mentioned this earlier. Eric the Driver said a walk-off bomb, triple play, diving outfield catch leading to a double play, stealing home, grand slam for the lead. Those are all good options.
Those are good. I think out of those, I probably like diving, or maybe diving or slash home run robbery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, the home run robberies.
Do you see the Rangers one from last night?
Yeah.
I think it was Travis Jankowski robbing the White Sox of what would have been like their 33rd win or something in an empty ballpark. I think a robbery over diving catch.
Yes, but I think back to the Brantley play where the dive and then tagging out Judge. Where it's like, doesn't even have to be the best catch.
Yeah.
It was such an electric moment.
The double off is good.
I mean, I think the home run robbery and the inside the park home run are always those are top two for
that's
me.
That's the one I wanted to bring up that Eric didn't mention was, I think inside the park home run is really good. Although, I think a lot of times with those, you need the defense to play along on that.
A little bit.
It's not a full-on error by the defense, but there is a mistake by the defense where it's an outfielder going back for it and crashes into the wall, and then you need the bounce to bounce a certain way away from the, you know, the left fielder or something who's coming over into center to pick it up. Like, you need a little bit more of that. I think as far as a play, like a triple probably has less of those where it is just pure like speed on display.
Unless it's like that one's almost like depends on the player. Like,
really?
Remember when Yordan's got his triples this year?
I was going to say, so slow guys,
like, when
slow Yordan, guy triples?
Like, I don't know. Like, you see Yordan just like turn to that corner at second base. Hudab says line drive to right with a throw out to first. That's good.
That's a good one.
Todd the show's right. This is a simple one. Strike him out, throw him out.
Talk about a playoff moment. The one in the Boston series in 2022? 2021 maybe? That one was 2021. That was awesome with Maldi to Correa, to strike him out, throw him out to end an inning, especially. Yeah, that's an overlook.
Walk-off grand slam. Yeah, I mean, those are almost just like so rare.
Yeah.
Because even then, like, is a walk-off grand slam is that much different than Yordan's walk-off against the Mariners, the 3-run homer? No, because there's two guys on base.
There's one more person on base.
Regardless, the walk-off is better. Sometimes the walk-off where, like, the walk-off with the play at the plate for the winning run, where they throw it home and you're hustling home to get there and being safe but just by a little bit, like, that's pretty great.
See, I think play at the plate, winning run trying to score, out. I think that's a more exciting play because it's a little bit more of like the there's the exhale of like that was almost very bad and now we're going to extras. I think plays at the plate, especially. I'm trying to think of a pitching one that isn't the strike them out, throw them out. I don't think there's really one as a pitcher.
No, because the pickoff is like not electric.
It's also camera wise, it's tricky to catch it.
They never get it right
because normally you're getting it after the play's over.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there was like a diving catch from a pitcher on a pop up bunt. That's not electric. It's just a good play.
Maybe like this is not like a specific play, but it's kind of a type of play. A pitcher web gym to preserve their own no-hitter or perfect game.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Isn't there a Burley one? I think Mark Burley had a good one.
And you can't even say, I think he had a diving catch,
a few years ago. It's probably 15 years ago.
Because even like the pitcher can have the immaculate inning.
Yeah,
but think about when it happened when the Astros had 2-1 game. The first time it happened, no one realized it.
Yeah, you don't know, and it's a lot of times it's something that the announcer will bring back, like come in the next inning, they call it out, but you can't really call it out as it's happening.
Yeah, that game, like they caught on TV that the next one was happening, but it's just I'm trying to find also this highlight from yesterday from Ben Gamble that got taken away from him, the home run, because the fan interference.
That fan interference, dumb. not okay. One of the most electric plays in baseball.
No, but I would take on this.
Oh, no.
If you can clearly see the uniform or the jersey or T-shirt that the fan is wearing, that team should be punished. Ben Gamble's home run should have counted if it was a Phillies fan reaching into the ballpark.
I get it. So it's you're part of the team.
Yes. Like, because that just means that, like, we could be in the front of the Crawford boxes.
Playing defense
to help the Astros by just reaching into the field and calling it a double.
Yeah, wasn't there, I think there was a Mookie Betts one in, like, 2018.
Yeah.
There's an interference play in right field. Yeah, I like that. There is a little bit of, you can have some, what's it called? Some crisis actors there. Although I will say, if you're doing that, if you're sitting in the front row in the outfield wearing the other team's jersey, just on the off chance you can interfere, I think you might deserve it. Like, I'm willing to just like, hey, you get that one. Like, if you're willing to go that far for it, I think I'll let you have one. I think that's a good rule. I like that because it makes the fans part of the game.
Yeah, I just feel like it should be like it should count as a home run.
Yeah.
If it was very clearly a Phillies fan that touched it, because they made it a home run by interacting.
Now,
what
do you do? And I am not just bringing this up because you're a Cubs fan.
Okay.
What do you do in a Bartman-like scenario where you have it's a fan interfering with his own team?
Then the original rule stands.
Just play on. Like, so it's no play.
If it was an Astros fan yesterday, it's a double.
Okay.
It's a double. It's not a home run. I'm saying that if it's a Phillies fan is interfering, that it should hurt the Phillies.
Okay. But there's no self-imposed, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how mad Alou gets.
Yeah.
We're not.
No, P. Hands can throw as much of a tantrum as he wants. Like, it's not going to change anything.
Okay.
Get the ground ball that goes through your legs, Alex Gonzalez, and maybe you don't have to wait until 2016. Yeah. But I think if it's your own team,
it's just the normal rule as is.
Yeah. But I think if you are the road team. And the home fans screw up a play, that they should be punished. That there should be some kind of like, nope, we're going to call that one a home run, even though by the rules it should not have been. They reached over. Keep the original call.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. I think it's time for change.
When you started off with I have a hot take about fan interference, I wasn't really sure where we were going. I like where we landed.
Ninth inning of a no-hitter.
That's a good one because it's not like a play, a specific type. That's what I was thinking with the pitcher Web Jim to preserve their own no hitter or perfect game, where it's more of a scenario or like a genre of play as opposed to like specific dive and catch or you know that kind of thing.
Yeah. All right. When we get back, we're gonna move over our NFL countdown because we're gonna have Pedro Muniz here from LaBerge joining us at 1:30, talk about what's going on with fantasy football and some of the stuff that you can do here at LaBerge, some of the experiences that you can have. So up next, our NFL countdown, 7 days. We're finally 7 days. We're almost there. That's next here on Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
The countdown to the NFL season continues with Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Second and 8, off the play fake, has some running room, inside the 30, inside the 20, Vic into the end zone, Falcons win in overtime.
That play-by-play does not do that highlight justice.
No, that
is the one where, if you can't tell, that is the one where they're taking on, the Falcons are playing the Minnesota Vikings, it's overtime, it's 24-24, and Vic, just as soon as he gets the ball out of the snap, he takes off down the field. The two Vikings defenders collide as he like slips right between them. He scores the game-winning touchdown. One of my favorite plays of all time. Honestly, like I know, bad dude in a lot of ways, but one of my favorite football players ever.
Yes.
I mean, the DeSean Jackson touchdowns when he was with the Eagles.
Yes.
I was watching one where it was like this video of Like, you forgot this dude played for this team, and it was him throwing touchdowns as a New York Jet, which I did forget about. Also, Pittsburgh Steeler, Michael Vick.
I forgot about that. Yeah. The Steeler one I forgot about. Going back to the call, one thing I think I noticed, this might be, this is verging, I'm almost ready to call this a take. It's still in the oven.
Mm.
I think football broadcasting used to be terrible.
I
just in general. Okay, I think it was good when we play like the 1950s and 1960s things.
Yes.
In the I'm just gonna blindly say in the 80s and 90s and maybe a little bit of the 2000s, it was just terrible.
I agree.
All these guys are like no selling these awesome plays.
That's why to me, John Gruden used to be such a hot commodity. On Monday Night Football, because like it was just him, he was just different. Like it was, you listen to Joe Buck, the way he used to call games in baseball and football versus the way he did now.
Yeah, it's like he was falling asleep.
Yeah,
like when we did the Tyree catch on Monday.
And it was awful.
It sounded like the worst play in the world.
Because honestly, what it probably was, you had a bunch of old white dudes who were sitting in a room, and they were probably telling these broadcasters to be as vanilla and as boring as possible.
Yeah.
And say, just tell me exactly what's going on. Show no emotion, no excitement. Just tell me what it is. And then they completely changed it. Obviously, best number sevens, you know, John Elway, Ben Roethlisberger,
CJ Stroud.
CJ Stroud, Ron Jaworski, Joe Theismann.
Okay, CJ Stroud is better than those guys.
Dan Pastorini.
Okay.
All Morton Anderson.
Morton Anderson. I feel like Morton Anderson's been on a couple of these.
Yes. I was trying. He probably has worn like half the numbers.
Yeah, because I imagine kickers get pretty low on the totem pole of what jersey they get to pick, and they probably have to move around a lot. So, yeah.
All right. What else is going on in the NFL? See, Rashee Rice, the Kansas City Chiefs, NFL PR guy, says that they don't anticipate putting Rashee Rice on the commissioner's exempt list, so you can just break a bunch of laws and, like, no big deal, whatever. I mean, he didn't kill anyone, so he just had a hit and run.
It is odd, though, and I'm sure it's a, you know, case-by-case kind of thing. But Browns defensive end, was Michael Hall?
Michael Hall.
Yeah, Michael Hall. We played audio of Kevin Stefanski swatting away all the questions last week or maybe 2 weeks ago now, and then he gets placed on cut day the commissioner's exempt list.
Yeah,
whereas Rashee Rice doesn't, and there is something I would
the
just
gravity
like,
of what he did is different, but there was three instances where it's like,
yes,
hey, maybe, you know, discipline this guy a little bit.
Yes, and, or just I don't know, like three games. Like, let's just, it's less about the, like, actual, the severity of the punishment I'm looking for. I'm just, I just want to know the consistency and what we're looking for, what we're looking at when we are deciding whether guys get suspended or put on the exempt list and things like that.
I guess I never thought we were going to see what's happening with Bill Belichick happening. When he got fired, I thought he would sit out a year. Maybe do McAfee or one show. But Bill Belichick is going to be on like three or four different shows, and now he's added another one. He's going to be doing The Breakdown, a show with Peyton Manning before the Manning cast.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't think he was going to be all over the place like this. This is the one where I'm the most interested in, because I think I'm actually going to be able to really learn more about the depths of football.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about this one.
Yeah, this is something we talked about, I want to say earlier this year, when obviously Bill Belichick walks away, fired from the Patriots.
Very James Clookie.
Nick Saban gets fired. Or he definitely didn't get fired. He retires. I was thinking of Mac Brown. Mac Brown got retired. He was forced to retire. Nick Saban retiring. We thought, this would be a fun podcast if they wanted to do it on, just drop it once a week on whatever interests them in football coaching or football X's and O's. And I guess we're getting a version of that with Peyton and Bill Belichick doing this. I agree with you. I think it's going to be really cool. I remember the NFL 100 list that they did. And
Bill was great.
Bill was on the council of elders that made the that put together the list and was sitting there telling stories. And I always remember the Ed Reed play where he just he talks about Ed Reed in the most glowing terms for like 7.5 straight minutes. It's incredible.
And then see what else is going on. The New York Giants. Okay, so Malik Nabers is going to get the number one.
Yes.
He had to ask the family of Ray Flaherty for permission. The Giants are unretiring the number.
My favorite detail is that the number one for the New York Giants was the first professional football number ever retired.
I don't understand how you're unretiring it.
I mean, Malik Nabers is good. I don't. They're not doing it for a scrub.
He better be really good.
He better be awesome. Like, I think if you, the stakes just went way up on Malik Nabers.
Yeah, if you're unretiring a number, I think
the oldest number ever retired.
Yeah, there are like new expectations for like, you better be like be damn good this year.
Like 17 receivers have worn 88 for the Dallas Cowboys, but no one's ever worn number one. For the new, or at least since what, like 1938 or something, no one's wore the number one for the Giants, and Malik Nabers is yanking it down off the side of MetLife Building and putting it on.
All right, and then the last one here, I think Tom Brady should have been good at broadcasting. I'm officially now not excited to watch him this year.
Whoa,
because I like my broadcasters with the ability to go to practice. I like my broadcasters with the ability to be in production meetings. Mm. I like my broadcasters with the ability to criticize officials. And Tom Brady can officially do none of those things. He can no longer go to practice. He cannot be in production meetings. He cannot have contacts with the teams that he is broadcasting games for because the NFL is letting him move forward and be a partial owner of the Las Vegas Raiders.
I'm assuming in a bunch of conflict of interest, kind of scenarios,
but
where
like,
as minority owner of the Raiders, he cannot then go to a Chiefs practice when he's calling a Chiefs game.
Yes, and he can't talk to Patrick Mahomes.
This makes it tough. This would make it tough for, and he can't talk to them.
He can have like casual conversations.
Yeah, he can't be in a production meeting with these guys. I don't actually really understand why he can't be in a production meeting with these
guys. Because they typically share. They share more detail about
if you're not
what the struggles are.
But you're not barring them from just like minority owners of just any minority owner in the NFL isn't barred from talking to a player on a different team.
No, but they couldn't like have like they couldn't be like X's and O's breakdown, I guess, in theory.
I guess the nature of the conversation that they're having,
it makes it more
complicated. Probably a little bit different. Yeah. That is fair. This sucks. I guess the NFL can't say like, hey, I know you signed a $300 million contract.
You can't buy the Raiders.
Turns out, or you can't call games.
Yeah.
Like I know if you want to, you're gonna have to void that contract, Fox and Brady. So I get why they can't do that. But yes, this sucks.
I always love coming here. The food's incredible. Chef Lyle's going to join us in the 2 o'clock hour, and they just brought like a burger tower out, and we're going to go to break right now. So that
we're going to go to break right when this
just like we talked about yesterday when we were at the Best Stop. Like this is a show in which we like to eat, and then also happen to talk at the same in same area.
Sometimes at the same time.
Yeah, sometimes at the same time. All right, it's Glenn George broadcasting live from the Sportsbook at LaBerge Lake Charles, right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at LaBerge Casino Resort in Lake Charles.
Gallant and George here, broadcasting live from the Sportsbook at LaBerge Lake Charles. We'll be out here today and tomorrow for the show. I know we got a bunch of plans for tonight to watch the Colorado game here at the book, and Sean Mapes filling in for Paul this week while he's on vacation. Right now we're joined by Pedro Muniz, a multi-purpose, that's not the word you told me.
Multi-unit.
Oh, your mic's muted. I'll fix that. Multi-unit general manager.
There's so many units.
I know, so many units. So, fantasy football season. I know we talked about a little bit last time, what you guys got going on right now. Before we get into, like, last minute, that people can come out here and book a fantasy football experience for their draft.
Right.
Have you seen anything wild? Have you seen anyone that's like, all right, we're putting, we're some weird way to pick their draft order. You got people swimming through the pool when they're not supposed to be. Like, what's going on?
It would have been
river
really
races
cool,
or
you
something.
Know, and I think next year we might have to just go ahead and make that just a mandatory thing. You got to race around the pool to see.
Yeah. I like
first
that
pick. I do like that.
Yeah, we saw the video of Field Yates at ESPN dislocating a shoulder on a tackling dummy somewhere on a beach somewhere. I don't know how they were determining the order in this way by tackling a tackling dummy. Have we seen any of that?
Didn't see any of that. Okay. I am curious. Did he get the first pick after it? Or did he just take a
I haven't seen the follow-up.
I don't think he said. He just dislocated his shoulder and then just posted the video.
I can't determine if it was worth it or not unless I know if I
yeah,
got the
where
first
he landed,
pick.
Where
right?
he landed.
You know,
yeah.
Is it a top three? Then it might be good to go.
Yeah, see, I still think next year that we're definitely going to do that. Next year we're going to get a group out here and do it. I still think it's you take $100 into the casino. And you say, you got 2 hours.
Whoever comes out with the most.
Yeah, like, most down to least, that's your draft
order. If
you're
positive, you're
yeah.
in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Whatever you can do, like you want to play blackjack, you want to play craps, you want to play video poker, like whatever you want to do. Yeah. Or you just want to sit on it and assume everyone else is going to lose their money.
No, you got to play. You got to play because, of course, you're going to.
But
yeah.
What if, like, someone hits, like, a major jackpot, right?
Well,
they
get the first pick then. They
get the first pick, but I'm making them cover all the buy-in.
Yeah, it depends how much.
Yeah, you need some, like, rules and regulations before they start. So tell us, like, what are the fantasy, like, draft packages that
it's a really cool immersive package, man, and you have the option to choose between doing everything or just bits and pieces of it, but you know, obviously, it's going to be a lot of unique, you know, food and beverage offerings like this that you see here in front of you, and you can go and order whatever you want from Chef Lyle. Cabana packages, right? Now you can do your draft inside the sports book or on the patio or outside of the cabana. We had some groups do that this past weekend. So maybe they didn't race for the first pick, but they were sure maybe swimming between picks. And that, you know, also on top of that is a really cool deal we have with our barbershop inside. So we have the option to kind of rent that space out for a little while and have, you know, get your hair cut, get your beard trimmed, have a little cocktail hour with the fellas and have a good time, man. And then also with our VIP section here inside the restaurant, you know, we've got 10 recliners that are always available.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether you want to be comfortable at a table or take up that recliner space, you know, everything's available.
And you guys are doing some stuff with where you can combo it with golf, right?
That's right. Thank you. I left one out. That's the best part, right, for the fellas. We threw the cabanas in case, you know, hey, you want to bring the significant other. We'll go do our draft. Y'all go hang out at the pool. But there have been many a tea times this past weekend with the draft.
That's awesome.
Also.
Yeah, that's the other one you could do, too, for the order. You could start with golf, and just best score gets the best pick
draft. Man, I got a buddy. His name's Mark. I wouldn't be able to do that with him because he's going to get the first pick.
I just guarantee
it. Yeah, man. If we're going off the drive, he's going to take me every time. So
I like that.
Maybe implement a handicap system.
I got to take the handicap.
I like how all these draft orders we decided, we've then immediately, like a real fantasy league.
Found major flaws with it.
And have to add 45 different confusing rules to it.
The skills challenge, man. You got to throw the darts to the skills. Yeah. Whoever hits the most, that could be a fun one.
We had a skills challenge last year for the station league that we did.
Yeah, they did.
I opted out.
I just took like the 11th pick in the draft. I was like, I'm not doing this.
You know what?
Like,
but, man, honestly, everyone's like, oh, I got to get that top pick. But I'm like, you know, I draft 11th or 12th. I get to turn around and I get two top 25s, right, instead of having to wait all the way till the end of that.
It's always the worst part, though, it's the third and fourth round.
Right.
Because after you make that second pick,
it's
you just feel like you're
time.
On the clock
such
forever.
That, and then it's also like, how's the league structured? Am I going QB round one? Mm-hmm. Am I going QB later on? You know, there's like one of our leagues is real QB heavy set, and so you're going to see the Mahomes and everybody be the one pick, you know, and that really determines for me what I'm doing.
So I know Chef Lyle's joining us here in the 2 o'clock hour, but can you give me some insight here of what I'm working with?
Man, he's got a bunch of cool stuff coming to the menu that he's going to talk to you guys about. This guy here is one of our big platters here. Obviously, he's got our full sets of wings. The only place in town you get them like that. Everybody tends to cut them in half, right? And you get flats or whatnot. Lyle gives them to you how they come, right? Whole. You got some fried jalapenos, fried green beans, fried pickles all together there, some onion strings. things. Some beef sliders, obviously, right? And what's that on the other end?
Some chicken tenders.
Chicken tenders.
And this is his sriracha honey sauce, but there's a number of sauces that, you know, that are listed on the menu that you can choose from.
And I guess some veggies. You know,
you have to put them on there. I appreciate Chef Lyle for thinking that we're going to have any veggies, giving us the benefit of the doubt. I seriously doubt we're going to be hitting the veggies
that hard. Are there for me. Like, all right, everything else is done. I'm still kind of grazing, right?
Okay, yeah. See,
much on a carrot.
I'm with you. Yeah,
that's all that's left, dude. I'll take the carrot. Right?
Instead of like instead of ordering another thing of fries, right? Like, you know, I'm just gonna pick at this. Yeah. Like, drink my beer, watch the game, and just like kind of wait it out.
Yeah, the celery's kind of light.
It's the food equivalent of mixing in a water.
Exactly.
That's what it is.
There you go.
So there's still obviously the NFL season doesn't start until we got 7 days. We start
7 days. Exactly.
Yeah. So we have 7 days from now. So there's still time for people to sign up for the fantasy draft package?
Yeah, absolutely.
They want to come in this weekend or something like that?
Yeah, we'd love to see you. Cool. You know, like myself, I think my last draft is on Tuesday, the 3rd. So for all of us latecomers, right, or last-minute guys and gals that want to get those in, man, we are here for every need you have. And like I said, it's whether you want to just come to the sports book here in LeBarge and do the draft or utilize the other amenities that we've set up with golf and cabanas at the pool, et cetera, et cetera. So we'd love to see y'all. Anybody.
All right. It's Galan George. Awesome. Thank you for joining us, Pedro, as always. We appreciate it. We're going to talk to you tomorrow, too.
Yeah, I'll be back tomorrow.
So we got some more cool stuff to talk about tomorrow.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
Wait. Tomorrow's
yes.
some good news. We've got, got some good reveals coming out
Yeah,
tomorrow,
for sure. So yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, there's a bunch of cool stuff happening here at the Sportsbook. Yeah, we can't really talk about it. I just don't even know. I'm still, you know, because I, you know, since I'm not one of the employees here, I don't know all the details yet. So we'll be. I'm just getting like little nuggets
you
of information.
Yeah, like y'all yeah. are first
some
to know,
clues
man.
Around.
We're breaking live on ESPN
there
Radio.
We go. Yeah, we're just getting like little nuggets of information. I'm like, all right, I'm ready to
like
get going. All right, thank you, brother. Appreciate
man,
it as always. And we'll
me.
See you tomorrow.
See y'all tomorrow.
It's Glenn George here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Sportsbook at LeBurge Lake Charles.
Now back to the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at LaBerge Casino Resort in Lake Charles with Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Come on, George here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Thank you to Pedro Meneve and Matt Holland so far for joining us on the show today. Both will be back with us tomorrow. We're going to reveal some cool stuff happening here at the Sportsbook and at LaBerge. Chef Lyle, we just crushed these burgers so far. See, Dana, my wife, and Sean have started on the wings. I'm going to get mine in the next break. I just had one of the fried jalapenos. Excellent.
Very good.
Simple but good.
We did say that we weren't going to have, or we didn't expect that we'd have very many vegetables. We proved ourselves wrong. We had some of the fried fried pickles.
We're talking about like the straight-up celery and carrots.
Yes. Okay. If you don't want to count fried pickles as vegetables, that's fine, I guess.
I mean, I'm fine with counting them.
Yeah, it's pretty judgy of you, but yeah.
All right, so tonight we'll be in here hanging out, watching the Colorado game, some of the other games going on. And when you hear people talk about Deion Sanders this year, there are some who think he could be the next head coach of USC. There are some who think he could be majorly on the hot seat this season if Colorado does not have a much improved season. I lean towards more he's going to have a good enough season to where he'll, you know, elevate into a much better job. But who do you think are the coaches this year, Sean, in your mind in college football with the most pressure
them? I think a guy that you have to look at immediately, pretty immediately, is Billy Napier at Florida. Going into year three at Florida, he's going to have to win some games to save his job. This is a program that's fired, I think, their last three coaches, and all of them went to an SEC title game. Billy Napier has not done that. And so I think Napier is probably on the hottest seat, and it's only amplified by the fact that not only they're starting their season this weekend against Miami, so an in-state school, they're also playing UCF in a non-conference game, a school that they believe that they are better than. They believe that it is a big three in Florida, and UCF is not in that group.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be a big game for them. Obviously, they're going to end their season in Florida State, and then the SEC gave them an absolute murderer's row, especially in November, of games that they're going to have to play. So I think Billy Napier not only is on the hottest seat, but probably the most eyes are on him as
and
someone
most likely to get fired.
Yeah, who's not going to make it out on the other side.
Yeah, I think the one coach that it will not get fired after one season, but has the most pressure to make the 12-team playoff, mm-hmm. to maybe win a playoff game, I think it has to be Kalen DeBoer.
Yeah.
I mean, the Alabama. Pressure to replace Nick Saban is, like, I don't feel this way about Sharon Moore because, you know, Michigan has the allegations. You know, they're going to get hit with some sanctions here soon, it seems like, actually. I just don't view Michigan as, like, this, like, they're in a lot of trouble kind of thing. Like, there's not the pressure to make the college football playoff.
Yeah.
But for DeBoer and Alabama to replace Nick Saban, I think the expectation is that you have need to have immediate success.
Yeah, I believe in Kalen DeBoer. I believe. I mean, Nick Saban left him in a pretty good spot. He's not taking over a disaster by any means. But I do think that, yeah, no matter who the first coach after Nick Saban was going to be, he was going to be a guy who was under immense pressure even starting off in year one. I think the 12-team playoff helps him because I like his chances to be able to say, hey, year one, made the playoff.
Yep.
It's a little bit easier to do now. I think by the same token as someone who I was going to say isn't in any danger of being fired. He's probably in some danger of being fired. He definitely shouldn't be. And if you look at his career record at Ohio State, he should not be under any pressure whatsoever for his job. But Ryan Day is someone who I think if you're not looking at it as losing his job, but just – how hard will your life be,
dude? If they don't beat Michigan, they have to win the national championship game. Like, I think you have to have that level, or at least get to the national championship game. If you lose to Michigan this year, all the talent they lost,
yes,
and then
no Harbaugh. I think those 13 guys drafted off last year's team. Yeah, it's a situation where their season might even be a one-game season as far as Ryan Day's quality of life is concerned in Columbus, Ohio. And then, yeah, even on top of that, with the amount of talent that they have, with the amount of resources that they got through NIL because Michigan just won the title and because they've lost their last three games against them and Michigan's won three straight Big Ten titles, I think there's pressure on Ryan Day starting on the Saturday after Thanksgiving in the game against Michigan. I think there's pressure on him the next week in the Big Ten title game playing whoever they play in the Big Ten title game to win the Big Ten. And I think there's going to be pressure on him for the first two or three playoff games that they have because with the amount of talent that's on this team, the amount of guys that came back, the guys that could have left and didn't because these guys that could have left that were juniors last year, they're guys that have these guys had never beat Michigan in their college career.
You have guys who were first-round picks last year.
I mean, yes.
Trayvon Henderson could have been a first-round pick, maybe a second-round pick.
Emeka Buka. You have JTT off the defensive line.
Yeah.
You have multiple defensive people or defensive players in the front line and in the backfield. Yeah, I think they're under immense pressure, probably being held to the highest standard. I think Ryan Day is being held to the highest standard of anyone in college football this year.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. It's just you got to beat Michigan. Like there are just certain games you got to win. Like there are now that A&M and UT is back, there are going to be Mike Elko if he in his first year as a good year, but not a great year, but he beats the Longhorns.
Yeah,
and it people will view this season as a success. They'll say, hey, we'll take a bowl game. And a victory over the Longhorns. Like now, that won't last forever because eventually, if you're Ohio State, it doesn't matter if you beat Michigan. Like your goal is still to win a national championship game.
Mm-hmm.
But since it's been 2 years, you got to do it. Like it's now or never. Anyone else that pops out for you most pressure?
I mean, Lincoln Riley is a guy who's going to be under a lot of pressure this year with how they kind of fell flat on their face last year, bringing back Caleb Williams. Moving into the Big Ten is going to be another kind of hurdle for them, another place that they need to be judged. But ultimately, it's all going to come down to that defense. I think Lincoln Riley, despite losing Caleb Williams, I still just have belief in, hey, Lincoln Riley's going to figure this thing out and is going to have a really good college football offense. No matter who you give them, it's really going to come down to, did the moves that they made on defense, taking UCLA's defensive coordinator, taking North Dakota State's, they're playing tonight, taking their head coach and making him the co-DC, are these moves going to at least bear fruit in, I mean, maybe not week one against LSU, but in year one in the Big Ten, can they get that can they get that train moving in the right direction?
Yeah, it's interesting because if he struggles, there really could be a chance we just like wake up and he just has left USC on his own accord because he's in the NFL.
Yeah, him and Ryan Day both have the. They might not be able to fire me, but I'm leaving town before the angry mob gets to my house.
Yes.
Like they still have enough juice to where they probably could be head coaches, definitely could be offensive coordinators next year if they want to go that way. And I think they probably have too much juice. I think they would have to be head coaches. But I think those two guys,
oh, yeah,
as far as guys with pressure on them to succeed that have a way to wiggle out of it, even if they fall short, they won't get fired. I think another guy who has high expectations, I'm not quite sure if, I mean, actually, I know, barring a disastrous year, he's not on fired watch, but I think Marcus Freeman has a good amount of pressure on him heading into year three.
I think
got to deliver on some of this hype. I think they will. I mean, not just playing the schedule game of like, well, they have three hard games this year. One of them is on Saturday against A&M. One of them is against USC. And I think they play Louisville somewhere in the middle of their season, who is a team that went to the ACC title game last year. So every other game on their schedule should be winnable and winnable by a good amount. So can you actually convert on that and win the games you should at Notre Dame?
You have to win the first or the last game of the season. You have to beat A&M or you have to beat USC. And you have to make the college football playoff this year. I like Marcus Freeman. I was glad when Tommy Reese left. I think last year we saw at Alabama why like that offense struggled. Because I don't think he's a good offensive play caller. And I think he showed that at Notre Dame and at Alabama already. But I agree with you. The hard part is I wonder like what the move is for them. And like, because I think there's a reason why Marcus Freeman's the coach. Mm-hmm. I think there's a reason why they didn't go into a full search,
yeah,
in trying to find their next guy. Like, they couldn't – I don't think they could lure Ryan Day from Ohio State. They couldn't, you know, pull a big name. You know, what happened to them with LSU,
yeah,
with Brian Kelly, I don't think they have the ability to do the inverse of that. So there's pressure –
yeah,
but Brian Kelly also like struggled for a couple of years.
Yeah,
and everyone was calling for his head, and he just kind of stood there.
He immediately came in, and I think in, was it year three? It might have been year two actually, where they make the title game against Alabama, and we won't talk about what happened in that game.
They lost quite a lot,
and then they did have a few years in the wilderness in the mid 2010s, mm-hmm. And I do think that. For Marcus Freeman, this is – he again, barring a 4-8 2016 type year, I do think that he's going to keep his job. But I do think that there's an amount of pressure on him, especially when taking into account you're at Notre Dame. You're expected to make the playoff with the schedule.
And next year is really – because next year is really the year. Where like you have Riley Leonard this year. Next year you have who's the Michigan coach?
Lloyd Carr.
Lloyd Carr. You have his grandson is your five-star quarterback crew. They have another kid coming in. Like, next year is really the year I look at Notre Dame, and it's like, all right, it's
got to do some real stuff.
If you don't do some real damage this year, next year is the year. You've got to, like, really do something to prove to me. Because they are using NIL a little bit so they can move forward. They're not like, you know, they're not Clemson.
Yeah.
Who's not using the transfer portal. Dabo belong on this list?
Won't use
the transfer portal?
Pressure for what, though? I mean, there's a little bit of... He's the best coach in Clemson history, so what are we exactly going to do? I mean, He's not going to have to deal with the callers on his coach's show anymore. So there's a little bit of pressure that's getting eased off right there. So I think, I get what you're saying. I think it's a lot of pressure externally, I'd imagine. I don't know at Clemson how much pressure there actually is for him to win the conference or make a playoff.
Yeah, I tend to agree. For some reason, they haven't like caught on yet.
I think it's just you have so much goodwill when you're the guy who won the only two national championships in 40 years at a program.
Look at Joe Pa.
Yeah.
When was the last time he won when he was alive and coaching at Penn State?
Was it the 90s? Or 80s,
so.
90s?
Yeah. Maybe the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, like, college football is the one sport where you can live off of one thing forever unless you're at, like, LSU.
Yeah.
Basically.
And they'll fire your ass if it's been 5 years. Yeah.
Where it's like, hey, your expectation at LSU is to win a championship in the first 2 or 3 years because that's what all the coaches have done. And then if, like, you're terrible 3 years later, you're gone. Brian Kelly might belong on this list then.
Yeah.
And if you do look at, like, Nick Saban and Coach O and all these guys who come into LSU and they have won national championships, like, early on, Brian Kelly has got to have some, at least, fan base pressure of, like, it's time to win a title.
I think some of it
already.
I don't know if it's quite title expectations, but I think it might be – It's make the playoff and not be a disaster on defense like they were last year. I think, like we were talking about with Lincoln Riley, I think that's where he can earn himself a lot of good credit, even if he does pull out a 9-10 win season, which is fine. Win most of the games you're supposed to. Keep it moving. Maybe make the play. You know, be on that playoff bubble. That's probably 9 wins in the SEC probably puts you on the playoff bubble. But just like. Don't give up 500 yards every game like they were doing last year. Don't be in shootouts against Mizzou, which is something that LSU does not want to ever find themselves in again. I think that's more of the expectation where it's just, hey, let's play a little bit more like LSU.
Yes, that would be they're a team I'm very interested in by this year. Ole Miss is another. I'm ready for college football season. I'm ready for –
Let's get these games kicked off.
Hugh Dabbs says, Brian Kelly, go back to Notre Dame. No, thank you. He can stay. Good luck at LSU to my LSU friends like Matt, who was on earlier, and other people who are listening.
Yeah, that's
I'm a hard pass on that one. We're not his family anymore, I would say. All right, when we get back, Chaz McCormick is being signed to AAA. We are still awaiting official news of Jason Hayward signing to the Houston Astros. I would imagine that's going to come within the next, like, 2 hours. So we'll get to that. And also we'll have a question of this. Who, since we're here at Sportsbook, who are you betting on to make an impact for the Astros on the playoffs? We're going to give you three options. That's next here on Glatton George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.